Session number 7038, Reel 4.
Journal Fox Pit, Reel 4. Journal, I think you were saying that when the destroyers came in to evacuate your force, they had to fight their way into the harbour.
Yeah. Well, two came in without any disturbance and took off a good deal of the surplus personnel that were on the quay, mostly AMPC personnel. They got out safely. Then three more came in, and as the last one came in, they were shot at from the forts above Boulogne, from the French guns, which had been taken over by the Germans and hadn't been properly dismantled by the French. And they hit the last destroyer pretty badly, but luckily, in a very good bit of seamanship, he managed to get the ship back out of the harbour and therefore enabled the other two destroyers to evacuate. Meanwhile, they engaged with their guns the forts and tanks on the hill and quite successfully knocked them out. They then continued and embarked the rest of the Irish Guards and Welsh Guards that were on the quay. They went out. Then another destroyer came in afterwards, and there were still a few personnel of the brigade there, including myself. And eventually, as we could hear no more information about the companies of the Welsh Guards, I embarked on that destroyer. When I got back to Dover, I asked the Admiral Ramsay to have send more destroyers over, which he did. But except for a few men of the AMPC, he wasn't able to find anybody else. But they went in and out of the harbour without being attacked at all.
And the Germans are still being cautious?
Yes.
How long did the voyage back to Dover take?
The voyage back, I suppose it's an hour and a half, a couple of hours.
Did anything happen on the voyage?
No, nothing. I know I was quite pleased to sleep all the way.
And what happened to the brigade after it got back to England?
We were ordered to go and assemble on Tweezledown Racecourse. And everybody came there. And we then, after a day there, we were allotted an area round London which to go to. First of all, we were allotted an area down near Chichester, and we went into a tented camp down there, and which we were supposed to be part of the defence of the coast. And at that time, I came under the 3rd Division. Meanwhile, we replaced our men and equipment and got going again and did a lot of digging a defensive line all along the coast above Chichester.
How long did it take to get the brigade back into full working order?
I would say that in a month we had all our replacements were there and all our reinforcements, and we were then in a fairly good state to start training again. Meanwhile, after that, we'd been moved nearer London, and came under London District as a mobile force to move in any direction in case there was an invasion.
Now, you said that you think your battalions behaved and performed well in Boulogne. How would you assess the performance of the enemy forces?
The enemies? Well, I think the enemy had come a long way, and they were, by the time they got so near the port, they were getting a bit cagey. They thought this can't go on so well for so long. And when we attacked them at Boulogne, I think they thought that probably we were much stronger than we were. And therefore, either by design or by pure physical exhaustion, they didn't really push the attack into Boulogne as hard as they might have. I doubt if they had any infantry, and therefore they probably wouldn't want to exploit tanks into the town where they would easily be destroyed. But I think that happened all along the front of our army then, that there was a certain sort of hesitation at this time about pushing home the attack on the ports.
What about their use of artillery? Was that effective?
Well, they had artillery, and we were shelled from time to time, but they mostly used aircraft to attack us with. But they had some quite powerful guns, and as I said earlier on, one shell hit brigade headquarters and made a casualty of our signal officer, a slight one, luckily. Otherwise, there were a few odd shells dropping about in the town. I don't think they had much artillery with them.
I think you said earlier that they were very quick to bring mortar fire.
Yes. So I think they're all their local. On the infantry level, they were very efficient, very quick to get going the moment they hit something. I think we can say that this particular short battle was rather exceptional in that we had practically no communication with anybody above us except when through the destroyers, and that either I or somebody had got to go to a destroyer and send a message, and the destroyer would then send the message to Dover, and they would reply from the War Office back to the destroyer. And if the destroyer, owing to shelling or anything, had to be moved out of the port, which it did on one occasion, we were then absolutely without communication.
Did you find this isolation disturbing?
Well, I don't know. I took it for granted. I never thought for a moment then that we were going to be allowed to evacuate, and I thought that we should all be in the bag. But once we were told to evacuate, then we had plenty of communication with England. But there was a long phase that afternoon when we were completely out of touch with anywhere else. We were told to stand and fight, and there we were left, you see.
So you expected then to be overrun and captured?
Well, I thought inevitably we were bound to be sooner or later, although they didn't press the attack that afternoon or evening. I mean, we had very little to defend ourselves with. We had no anti-tank guns. We had no artillery. So it was only a question of time that we would be starved out sitting on the end of the quay.
What about ammunition? Were you well supplied with that?
Well, we had plenty of small arms, I think, because there was an awful lot of stuff lying about. And I think we should have been all right in that way, because one officer of the Welsh Guards was left behind, and he defended a small position right down on the quay for another 2 days with about 20 men. And he was then wounded and taken prisoner. And the men were all taken prisoner.
When you were given the order to stay in position and defend it, not withdraw, did you pass that order down to the battalions?
Oh, yes, I did, yes. It was after our first withdrawal into a nearer position to Boulogne, and I said, you've got to prepare to fight where you are. And they then got on and defended the houses.
How was this order taken, this order to stay and fight to the last man?
Well, it was rather confused, the way we got the orders, owing to the distance of our communications, but they got it quite clearly in both cases that they were to stay, and quite clearly that when they were allowed to withdraw. And I think they took it for granted that we just got to fight it out originally. and they were making what provision they could in the town for defending the houses and that sort of thing. And I think they took it. I had luckily had two very good commanding officers who had complete control over their battalion, and I think they took it very well.
So they prepared to stay and
yes,
fight the bitter end.
Yeah.
Are there any general lessons which one can draw from the fighting in Boulogne?
I think that one of the main thing is the administrative lesson. To send an absolutely unequipped and only half-trained brigade into a position like Boulogne, where you had no communication at all with a higher authority, was a very big test on any formations. And I think that was the chief lesson one's got to hope that will never happen again in that position. We learned quite a lot about communication when you hadn't got the ordinary normal ones, about how useful the liaison officers on their motor bicycles were, and how, one couldn't have run the battle without them. Anything else?
When you got back to England, did you find that people had a realistic idea of what had been going on in France and in Boulogne?
No, I didn't, and I found the people, my direct commander in London District, had no idea really what had been asked to do, and what had happened when we got there. I think quite a lot of people at the War Office, before I went out to Boulogne, they had no idea what was going on in France at that time. And so there was very little proper communication between the troops in France, and that included all the armies and the War Office.
I think you were saying earlier on that you observed, at least in one commander, the effects of fatigue and lack of food.
No, I don't think. I think we. I never struck me that we hadn't been there long enough to be really exhausted. And the other thing was our feeding position was never very critical because there was so much food lying about and so much supply. We never had any question of running short of food or water.
So your own brigade was in good condition when it came back?
Oh, very good, yeah. I've already stated that one of the major problems of an operation like this was the lack of proper communication between units and brigade and higher authority. I also think that a force like that should be never sent on an operation of this sort without being properly equipped for what they're going to do. We obviously were going to get up against tanks, but we had very inadequate anti-tank weapons, and our the anti-tank guns in our battalion are only partially trained, and we'd only just been equipped with them. And the people that we were sent from the artillery also hadn't been properly trained, and had no tactical training. They had no idea how to dig their anti-tank guns in or anything like that. And therefore, they didn't stick it very long. Never suffered from a problem of supply of small arms ammunition, because we had no bigger arms to supply, nor did we suffer from the lack of food, because there was a mass of stores dumped all over the place that we could use. So those two problems never came into this. If we'd been there longer, the problem might have certainly arisen, unless we could have been supplied by sea. Aye.